Well, greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service in public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on the Dr. Laura story when we come back. And let me ask you this. What do you think's wrong with the Ten Commandments? Well, it's pretty obvious that something is wrong, very wrong, with the Ten Commandments because they've been banned from our public schools, banned from our public institutions, and banned from our national consciousness. Now, instead of these 10 simple, time-tested laws, we see the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto in their place, and they teach the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto in our public schools or public institutions. We've made them a part of our national psyche. Now, this is a pretty radical change in our political and moral outlook over the past 50 years, don't you think? Are you aware, for instance, that your daughter couldn't receive an aspirin in your public school without your consent, but she can have an abortion arranged through that same public school without even your knowledge, much less your consent? That's why I contend that the solution to this moral perversion of national insanity is to go back to what worked. Let's go back to the Ten Commandments and the Mosaic Law. You know, our founding fathers practiced and advocated the Ten Commandments. They even put 22 principles of that law into our federal constitution. And there's at least one school left in America that still teaches this entire Mosaic Law, the Ten Commandments, and all 759 statutes, judgments, commandments, penalties, as well as the 33 benefits for their observance. You know, every law is a penalty, and you don't have to know what that penalty is to suffer its effect. So whether you call that the Mosaic Law or the law of God or common law or natural law or karma or something else, you know, it's automatic. It works just like AIDS, herpes, and VD, which just happens to be the natural penalty for adultery. Now, if you'd like more information, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package. It's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. Remember, it's educational. It's informative. It's entertaining. Best of all, it's free, and you can call and order yours right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. If you're online, go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click on the email machine and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Again, georgegordon.org, or call direct, 417-273-4967. All right, here's the last installment to our story on the Dr. Laura story. Remember, we have a young woman named Christina Erickson. She's a college student, I presume, up in Vermont. She put a letter out, a pretty humorous letter, on the Internet some years back, asking Dr. Laura Schlesinger to ask and or to answer, rather, these 14 questions. So we've covered 10 of the questions so far. And I took it up because it's a story whereby she's trying to poke fun at the Bible, at God, as well as this Dr. Schlesinger at the same time. And I thought to myself, well, now, wait a minute. If we had a civil tongue in our head, as my old granddad used to say, you know, it's time for you to get a civil tongue in your head. And let's be intelligent people and ask intelligent questions. Now, actually, the 14 questions are pretty intelligent. It's the way she asks or puts these 14 questions that makes it so humorous. And it's funny, you know, in our society, it's funny to poke fun at God and to make him look like the fool and the boob, and he's kind of dumb, you know. I mean, we're real smart. We've got a 13th Amendment that outlaws slavery. You look in the Bible, and you've got a bondservant statute that affects four categories of behavior for which strict liability kicks in. Of course, we here in the Western world, we believe in our insurance and insurance companies, so we have insurance, and we practice limited liability, which shows that God is out of touch with reality. And so we think that it's really funny and real fun, you know, to poke fun at these laws that God set down, you know, 3,300 years ago, because he's old, he's archaic, he's out of touch with reality, doesn't know what's going on, and we're smarter than God. And this young woman's been to college, and of course that makes her pretty smart. So she goes on and she asks this question, and she says the next question, which is about Leviticus 19:19, is a forked question. So the next question is a forked and compound question, as we call it in law, and I want to object. I object on the grounds that this question assumes facts, not in evidence, and that it mischaracterizes the intent of the lawmaker. But I'm going to cite the question just the way this young woman asked it, so that she can't say that I misquoted her. So here's her question. It says, my uncle has a farm. He violates Leviticus 19:19 by planting two different crops in the same field, as does his wife by wearing garments made of two different kinds of thread, cotton and polyester blend. He also tends to curse and blaspheme a lot. Is it really necessary that we go to all the trouble of getting the whole town together to stone them? Leviticus 24:10-16. Couldn't we just burn them to death at a private family affair like we do with people who sleep with their in-laws in Leviticus 20:14? So there's the question. Actually, it's a multiple question. which is why we call it a compound or forked question. You couldn't answer that question. Well, you know, are you still beating your wife on Wednesday? Answer it. If you answer yes, you admit to it, and if you answer no, you admit to it. Now, the reason that we object is on the grounds that the question is forked. He speaks with a forked tongue, the Indians used to say, forked tongue, like a snake. That's the way Lucifer was pictured, remember, in the Garden of Eden, as a serpent, a snake. Forked tongue. So let's go back and let's take a look at the statute itself, Leviticus 19:19. Let's read it. It says, "You shall keep my statutes, and you shall not let your cattle gender with a diverse kind. You shall not sow your field with mingled seed, and neither shall a garment mingled of linen and woolen come upon you." A garment mingled of linen and woolen come upon you. "And you shall not sow your field with mingled seed." Well, what is mingled seed? Anybody ever ask the question? And the young woman says he violates Leviticus 19:19 by planting two different crops in the same field. All right, let's just take a look at two different crops in the same field. How big does a field need to be before you're in violation of the law? Nothing in the statute tells us how big the field needs to be, but it tells us not to sow our field with mingled seed. She says, my uncle sows the field with two different crops. Let's suppose that we put a pasture together, and in the pasture we plant ryegrass, orchard grass, fescue, Johnson grass, Ladino clover, red clover, white clover, and would you call that a mingled field? Think about it. Is that what mingled means? Does mingled mean mixed, or does mingled mean cross-pollinated? Now, you know, today, when people go into the store and they buy broccoli, and that broccoli is what we call hybridized, hybrid. We go into the nursery and we buy seed, and or we go to Walmart and we buy some packages of seed, and they're marked very plainly. It says hybrid, new, improved, hybrid. It's new, it's improved, and it's hybrid. And new and improved is what we're looking for. See, if it's old and standard, old and usual, old and ordinary, archaic, antique. See, I plant antique, open pollinated seed. I don't plant new and improved. Improved? Excuse me. How did you improve the seed? And when we say new and improved, it's kind of like Luther Burbank. My grandmother, if Luther Burbank had been alive, would have worshipped Luther. I mean, she thought Luther Burbank was the greatest thing since sliced white bread. The Luther Burbank this, Luther Burbank that. I mean, she was a gardener. She was a Green Thumb gardener, and she really liked Luther Burbank. Now, he was a great hybridizer. He was a great botanist. Monsanto, they've got scientists there. They're great scientists and great botanists, and they work real hard, and they hybridize seed. In fact, they've got seed now. They call it GMO, GMO seed. That's where you not only hybridize it, you splice in some other gene. You splice in genes from fish into tomatoes and things like that. I mean, that's the kind of thing that mingled is talking about. Because, see, if you planted a field and you put watermelons in that field with corn, so what? Watermelon and corn doesn't mingle. The pollen from the corn isn't going to cross-pollinate or fertilize the watermelons, or vice versa. But plant two varieties of corn in the same field. In fact, you got to plant corn a quarter of a mile away in order to keep it from cross-pollinating. So Leviticus 19:19 isn't talking about mixing crops. It's talking about hybridizing or mingling seed. And the same thing is true with the first portion. It says, you shall not let your cattle gender with a diverse kind. Well, wait a minute. You know, old Jacob was quite a cattle breeder. Jacob, you know, our great-great-great-granddaddy Jacob, he was a cattle breeder. And in the process of breeding cattle, he made himself pretty rich. Of course, he made his father-in-law pretty wealthy at the same time. But I think most of you street people, you city people, you know, when you read that story about Jacob, you know, and about the brambles and the thickets and things like that, and he was breeding his cows, or he was doing something like, you know, turning around three times and shaking bat's knuckles under the first full moon, and then there was some religious voodoo going on here, and brindle and ring-staked cattle, calves, came out. Now, it didn't have anything to do with voodoo. It had to do with crossbreeding cattle, which it looks like right there. You shall keep my statutes, and you shall not let your cattle gender with a diverse kind. So I got to thinking about that, and I looked up that word cattle in the original Hebrew, and it says four-footed quadruped. King James translators, they translated that cattle, four-footed quadruped. So I looked that up, and yeah, we can do that. We can take white-faced cows, take a white-faced bull, and breed that bull to an American bison, and we'll come up with a beefalo. a crossbred between a four-legged quadruped called a bison with a beef cow or beef bull, and yeah, we can come up with an offspring. We can take a donkey and we can breed it with a horse and come up with a mule. We can take goats and sheep and breed them together and come up with geeps, and that's what that statute specifically prohibits, the crossbreeding or the attempt to create this new species, which is against the law. So don't breed your cows with American bison and come up with beefalo, or goats and sheep and come up with geeps, or donkeys and horses and come up with mules. Now, we've been doing that, you know, for thousands of years, but it's just as criminal and just as against the law. It just violates the law of God. It's just giving him the finger, you know. I told you not to do that, and he said, well, I'm going to go out and do it anyway. All right, now the next portion of the statute says that you shall not sow your field with mingled seed. That's where the purpose behind this mingled seed or hybridization is to get higher yields, to get more bushels to the acre. Well, that makes all the sense in the world. You know, we'd like to get more bushels per acre. We don't want to practice the land Sabbaths or the Jubilees, but we want to get more bushels to the acre through GMOs and Monsanto and chemicals and dyes and sprays and chemical fertilizers and so on. Well, this statute addresses three issues: cattle breeding, hybridizing seed, and mixed fabrics and clothes. So I'm not going to spend a lot of time on cattle breeding because she didn't ask about cattle breeding, so it's really irrelevant and immaterial to our analysis, but since we're on the statute, I thought I'd go that far and explain that to you. Hybrid seed is a violation of law because it has a direct effect on the quality of the food produced by your uncle. You see, the reason that hybridization of seed is prohibited is that hybrid food is inferior in quality, doesn't have the vitamins and minerals in it. People who eat hybrid food are starved of nutrients and they develop diseases, and that's why I don't hybridize my seed, nor do I buy from people who do, nor do I eat food that is hybrid. I leave that to people who live in the city with uncles who violate this law and develop cancer, muscular dystrophy, diabetes, and the other degenerative diseases, and then make fun of the law that was designed to protect them from the uncles that produce this kind of food for profit, not health. Now, listen to this citation from Acres USA on the subject of hybrid versus open pollinated seed. Those of us that are into organics, people, you know, that are interested in vitamins and minerals and food value, and they're kind of odd, about as odd as an Amish man, about as odd as a Jew that doesn't cut his sideburns. Well, they don't stand out, you know, you don't see anything that's really physical about them, but they stand out because in conversation, or you see them, you know, the way they eat, or they go into the Wild Oat store and they sidle up, you know, to the juice bar and they order carrot juice with a shot of wheatgrass. Well, that's real weird, isn't it? Now, listen to this. Some of the successes that have attended corn production, for instance, may have been the result of distorted accounting procedures. In terms of nutrients, just looking at vitamins and minerals and nutrients in your food, open pollinated, you know, that's the old line, antique seeds, not the new and improved. Oh, no, the unimproved, old, tiny, antique seeds. Okay. The success that's attended corn production may have been the results of distorted accounting procedures. In terms of nutrients, open pollinated still has an enviable record. Adolf Steinbraun of Fairbanks, Iowa, put the matter in perspective by having samples of corn tested for ingredients that are usually added to commercial feeds. When compared to some 4,000 samples of hybrid corn tested in 10 Midwest states in a single year, Adolf Steinbraun's open pollinated corn contained 75% more crude protein, 875% more copper, 345% more iron, and 205% more manganese. And the same trend has also been seen in the content of calcium, sodium, magnesium, and zinc. And in the opinion of many eco-farmers or ecological farmers, hybrid corn merely masks poor farming by producing bins and bushels without the nutrients that are really corn's reason for being. Now, why do you eat? What's the purpose for sitting down and eating an ear of corn? Oh, it tastes good. Tastes good. Well, that's an important part. It's not the reason for eating. I'm hungry. That's why I eat. Why are you hungry? Your body is crying out for nutrients. It needs fuel. And your body runs on vitamins and minerals. Now, open pollinated corn, that is the non-hybridized, the non-mingled corn. Did you get those numbers? They have 875% more copper, 345% more iron, 205% more manganese, 75% more crude protein. Boys and girls, there's 92 ingredients that go into that corn called trace minerals, vitamins and trace minerals, 92 of them. And the open pollinated corn, you know, the stuff that God created back at the Garden of Eden, has more of it than the new improved varieties from Luther Burbank and Monsanto. Now, it is true that the new improved varieties produce more bins and bushels. For instance, it used to be that if we got 60 bushels of corn to the acre, that's pretty good. Today, it's pretty common to get 100 to 120 bushels to the acre. Using chemical fertilizer and sprays and various other additives and hybridized seed and irrigation, and you put all that together and you can produce 120 bushels. All right, so now we got twice as much corn. Now, listen to this. We have 875% more copper. Well, 875% more is eight times as much. So we get twice as much, corn, but we have eight times less copper in it. Now, you know, copper is an important element in your diet. We have 345% more iron in the open pollinator, so it has 3.5 times more than the double the production. So you double your production, but you come up with 2, 3, 8 times less nutrients in the food, which is the very purpose for food's existence, is to give you nutrition. You see, you really don't need to eat the corn. What you need is the copper, iron, manganese, protein, and the other nutrients or elements that are in there. We don't need to eat the corn. The corn is the vehicle. It's kind of like smoking a cigarette. You don't need the cigarette to get the nicotine. Why? Nicotine is what we're after. The cigarette is the vehicle that delivers the nicotine. We really don't like tobacco or burning paper. We're not smoking to get burning paper and tobacco and smoke. We're smoking to get nicotine into our blood. It's like an addict. Now, Leviticus 19:19 is a health statute. It's designed with specificity to protect your health. And then, of course, God's dumb and we're smart, and so we go to college and get letters after our name so we can ask those smart alecky questions, ridicule, impugn, make fun of these laws and statutes that are designed to give you good health. Now, I don't care if you have good health or not. Don't let me get in the way of your happiness and success. Hybrid broccoli is down at Kroger's. Go buy it. I don't want it. I pay more and I get open pollinated broccoli from some other place that's got 3, 4, 5 times, 8 times more nutrients in it, which is the purpose for food. Now, you notice again that she's pointing out that this guy needs to be killed. Boys and girls, the violation of Leviticus 19:19 is not death. It's not death. Now, the third issue in Leviticus 19:19 is mingled fabric. Well, let's talk about mingled fabrics a little bit. Sounds kind of crazy. But did you notice that when you go into a store to buy something, in the back of the t-shirt, there's a tag? You ever notice that? Clothes always have a tag on. And on the tag, it tells you what the percentages of the fabrics are that are in the clothes. Very common. You pick up a pair of socks and you look at the tag and it says, oh, it's 85% cotton and 15% polyester, nylon, or something else. Sometimes it'll have a variety of fabrics. I've seen clothes that are made with 4 or 5 different fabrics in it. Words that you don't know and never heard of before, and their tones all blended together, and they made this pair of socks or this shirt or this sweater for you. And we're told that these are better. Well, I mean, if somebody actually told you the truth and said, well, let me sell you this pair of socks. It's a violation of the law of God. It violates Leviticus 19:19, and it'll probably kill you. But, hey, listen, they're cheaper than the 100% cotton socks. Now, there's no such thing as a broken law without a penalty. Boys and girls, sin is the transgression of the law. Sin is crime. And the wages of sin is death. We're talking about death here. I don't think that's funny. I don't think that's too humorous. I've never been to a funny funeral. Every funeral I've ever gone to, there's weeping and wailing and crying and gnashing of teeth, and people are feeling real bad. Never went to a happy funeral. So, you know, when God tells you, listen, you don't want to do that because the penalty is death, and, you know, it's pretty serious stuff. The wages of sin is death. Now, every law ultimately has a death sentence attached to it. You know, going down to Flo's whorehouse is a lot of fun for the boys on Friday night. Now, of course, attendant to those whores in the whorehouse, there are such things as AIDS, herpes, and VD. And these venereal diseases shorten your life and kill you. AIDS is fatal. The AIDS cocktail that they're selling you now, the pharmaceutical company selling you these AIDS cocktails, keeps you alive on average 8 years, and then you die. So let's see, you're 39, you got AIDS. Okay, so you're not going to die at 39 with AIDS, or 40 or 41. You're going to die at 46, 48, or 50 from AIDS. That's all that means. And instead of dying, you know, within 2 years or 6 months or 1 year or something like that from AIDS, you'll have a long, continuous disease that you can spend $100,000 a year treating over the next 6 or 8 years and make the pharmaceutical companies a lot of money in the process of dying. There's nothing fun and there's nothing funny about AIDS. There's nothing fun and there's nothing funny about adultery. Now, you can make it fun and you can kid yourself that it's fun and you can get drunk enough to call it fun, but when you go to the funeral, it ain't fun. Never saw any funeral that was fun. You know, life is a serious business, and it ought to be taken seriously. this statute, Jesus, you know that guy that everybody's talking about, you know, Jesus, love? Well, in Matthew 4:4, he made this observation. He said, man doesn't live by bread alone, but he lives by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God. This is some of the words that came out of the mouth of God. He said, now, don't wear mingled clothes. Don't wear clothes with mingled fabrics in them. All right, so let's take a look at that. The third issue addressed in Leviticus 19:19 is called mixed fabrics. Now, I don't wear any clothes that have mixed fabrics because of the statute. Now, one time a guy by the name of Jerry Friedenstein did a demonstration at the Acres USA convention in Kansas City, Missouri in 1989, in which he tested the electrical field or the aura around some people's bodies. Now, this aura can also be photographed. The photography is called Curlian photography. Curlian photography. The subjects who were wearing 100% natural fabrics could be measured with ultra-sensitive electrical probes to a distance of 9 feet from their bodies. That was the farthest out. That was my wife. She was the champion. Friedenstein could measure her aura, her electrical field emanating from her body 9 feet. Mine was 7 feet, and several other people's there was 5-6 feet. And then he asked each one, he said, now, what kind of a shirt have you got on? Well, it's a polyester shirt. Well, what kind of a shirt have you got? Well, I got mixed fabric. Well, what kind of pants have you got? Well, I've got 100% cotton Levi's. And there was a guy standing over there wearing one of these polyester, he was pretty funny, polyester leisure suits. Remember those back in the 70s and 80s, the leisure suit? And he's back there kind of snickering, you know, like this young woman, Christine Erickson, you know, kind of making fun of him. And so he said, well, sir, would you like to participate in this test? And he pointed the probe at this guy, and he says, I don't get a reading. Come a little closer. And so the guy kept coming a little closer, and there's about 10 people gathered around here, you know, watching the meters and dials on this little black box. And pretty soon the guy gets down to about 12 inches away from the probe, and it starts to move up. And then as the probe itself got to within about 2 or 3 inches from this guy's hand, or from his hands were near his chest, I guess probably measuring close to his chest, it finally pegged 3 or 4 inches from him. Now, I don't know what the value is of this electrical aura that's around your body, but it's there. And I suspect that God, the Creator, put it there for a reason. I don't know what the reason is. You know, I've got a new GMC SUV out here, and it's got a book in there, and it tells me all kinds of things. I don't know what the hell they put that in there for. I don't know what it does. There's a lot of things that I don't know what they do or what they're for, but I presume that the engineers knew what they were doing, and they put in these anti-sway bars and these anti-locking brakes, and I don't know how they work, and I don't know why they work that way, but somebody said that they were a pretty good invention. So, you know, we buy a lot of things out here. We don't necessarily know how they work. I'm sitting here making up a radio program, and I've got this black box sitting on my desk, and it's got dials and buttons all over the thing over here. And I push the dials and the buttons, and it makes the CD, and I'm happy with it. I haven't got a clue as to what's going on in that box. I haven't got a clue. And if anything goes wrong with it, all I can do is take it to the repair station. I don't know what they'll do next. But that doesn't mean I don't know how to push the buttons and dials and make the thing work. So it's a heck of a neat tool, and it works like a shot, and I love it. And that's the same thing that you've got with your body. You know, your body works like a shot. You don't have to necessarily know that you've got an appendix or what it does or what it's for. But it's there for a reason. Same thing with your tonsils and adenoids. It's there for a reason. Now, this designer, you know, of the human body designed it with a magnetic field. And then he gave us a law to protect you and your magnetic field from disease. Particularly. These neurological diseases, you know, like Parkinson's disease, and you get the shakes over here, and you start to degenerate, or like Lou Gehrig's disease. You know, disease is the penalty for the violation of these three provisions of Leviticus 19:19. Not death. Death comes as a result of the disease, but we don't take people out and stone them to death because they wear mixed fabrics or because they eat hybridized broccoli. And although death may result from the disease, the penalty is not execution. So this young woman, in pointing fun at, you know, she's having a good time, and she's pointing her finger at, and she's making sport, kind of like a David Letterman, you know, making sport here out of the laws of God. Kids, they're kind of serious. They all deal with life and death, every one of them. And that's because the wages of sin is death. The wages of the violation of these laws ultimately end in death. You just go ahead and eat Monsanto food. You just go ahead and live out of the supermarket. In 1900, one person in 33 would be expected to get or contract cancer in his lifetime. Today, it's 1 out of 2. In spite of all the billions of federal dollars that are spent and all of the hoopla about all the research and all of the hype that you see on the 6 o'clock news with Bob Schieffer about the cutting edge of medical technology and new discoveries looking for the cause of cancer, cancer is 15 times more prevalent today than it was 100 years ago. In spite of all that crap, your chances of getting cancer are 15 times greater than they were for your great-granddaddy. Now, why don't you go out and spend twice as much money and see if it does you any more good? Hey, I got to give you a reminder here. And that reminder is you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. If you'd like more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Remember, The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement, The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. And if you'd like more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. Remember, the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives, and that can be accessed through the website. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, please call the Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertiser, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. It's georgegordon.org. Or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we got a couple more questions here from our friend Christina Erickson. I call her friend by now after having answered 14 questions here in her email. She's like an old-timey student, you know. She went on to say in that question, she says, now the second half of your question does deal with the death penalty for blasphemy. This question is obfuscated because you're suggesting that your uncle be burned to death instead of stoned to death for blasphemy. All right, now, here's the law on blasphemy, which is treason against God. Now, God doesn't care much for blasphemy. Neither does the United States of America. We call it treason. Now, when you commit treason against your sovereign, then that sovereign says he wants the death penalty. So it isn't, don't be suspicious or don't be, you know, out of touch with reality here. We do the same thing here in the United States. Typically, when we catch some guy stealing, you know, secrets, state secrets and so on, we put him in jail. But it's not uncommon, you know, historically, to put spies or people that are practicing treason to death. Very common. Very common. And God calls it the death. It calls for the death penalty for practicing treason against him. And he's very narrow-minded that way. Very narrow-minded. Here's the statute. It says, and the son of an Israelitish woman, whose father was an Egyptian, went out among the children of Israel, and his son, or the son of the Israelitish woman, and a man of Israel strove together in the camp, and the Israelitish woman's son blasphemed the name of the Lord and cursed. And they brought him to Moses, and his mother's name was Shelomith, S-H-E-L-O-M-I-T-H, the daughter of Dibri of the tribe of Dan. So he was a Danite. He was a Viking, one of those mean dudes. So they put him in ward, in the mind of the Lord, or that the mind of the Lord might be showed them. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, well, bring forth him that has cursed without the camp, and let all that heard him lay their hands upon his head, and let all the congregation stone him. And they shall speak unto the children of Israel, saying, whosoever curses his God shall bear his sin. I want to underline that. Whosoever curses his God shall bear his sin. Now, you see, preachers, they look at that and they say, oh, my God, he used some four-letter words. He used some bad words. We have that on the radio today. So there's certain words that we can't use here on the air. But that's not cursing God. That's just rude and obnoxious. You know, just using four-letter words is not cursing God. This guy cursed God, an act of treason against God. Now, that you want to avoid. But again, even if her uncle did curse God, which probably didn't, because, see, most of you people don't know how to curse God. You haven't done that. You use bad language. You use four-letter words. You use the F word, you know, or the N word, or the S word, or something else. You know, that's not cursing God. That's just rude and obnoxious and bad language. Cursing God is where you actually condemn God to hell with God. And so this guy here, he cursed God, and God labeled him for what he was. And he said, whosoever curses his God shall bear his sin. Doesn't have anything to do with using bad language. And he that blasphemes the name of the Eternal, he shall surely be put to death. And all the congregation shall certainly stone him, as well as the stranger. Now notice Christina says, well, should we burn him to death? No, there is a penalty in the Bible for burning. If a priest's daughter goes out and gets laid by the neighbor boy in his Chevy van. In other words, if she practices fornication, then the penalty for a priest's daughter, not for a plumber's daughter, not for a carpenter's daughter, you know, not for a truck driver's daughter, the penalty for a priest's daughter, a Levite priest or an Aaronic priest's daughter who practices fornication or adultery, the punishment is burning at the stake. Okay, and there's one other. Woody Allen did this. He's married to a woman, and this woman had a daughter. And Woody Allen was having sex with his wife, that's the mother, and with the daughter. We call that incest. That is punishable by death, and death by burning at the stake. Two crimes are punishable by burning, not by stoning. Now, of course, God doesn't understand this thing of capital punishment. He didn't know about lethal injection. He didn't know about kinder and gentler. And I want to point out to you that God says there can be no remission of sin without the shedding of blood. Shedding of blood. There's no shedding of blood in electrocution. No shedding of blood in a gas chamber. There's no shedding of blood with hanging, and there's no shedding of blood with a lethal injection. So here you are in your kinder, gentler state, and here's your God says there can be no remission of sin without the shedding of blood, and the state is absolutely unified. Every state in the union, absolutely unified, there shall be no forgiveness of sin. There will be no shedding of blood. Now, those killers and murderers, you know, they're not bashful. They shed the blood of their victims. Now, he goes on here a little bit. He said, and he that blasphemes the name of the Eternal, he shall surely be put to death, and all the congregation shall certainly stone him, as well the stranger as he that is born in the land. When he blasphemes the name of the Lord, shall he be put to death. So, you know, if you're a Vietnamese and you live here in the United States, and you violate the law of God, you're under our law. And then God said, I don't care who this guy is, if he's a native born or if he's a stranger in the land, you commit treason. You blaspheme the name of the living God, you commit treason against the living God, and the punishment is death. But it's death by stoning, it's not by burning. And this woman over here says, well, gee, shouldn't we burn him to death? No, no. And then how about this death without trial, without witnesses for his defense, without due process, without equal protection and conviction and no appeal? I mean, wouldn't your uncle be entitled to these equal protection due process benefits? I mean, at the mouth of two witnesses or at the mouth of three witnesses shall the matter be established? Don't you think that before we put him to death, we ought to at least have two witnesses? You know, somebody besides you, Christina? And then to add insult to injury, you want to execute him privately and by an unapproved method of execution for his crime. Well, when you execute somebody privately, don't we call that murder? Isn't that what murderers do? They execute people, they just pull them off the streets and kill them. Don't we have a name for that? Murder. Isn't it? And then finally, as you can see plainly, blasphemy and cursing God are punishable by death. Death by stoning, not burning. Woody Allen took his wife's daughter, and if you'll remember, that's a crime worthy of death by being burned at the stake, for which penalty only comes up in two crimes. The other is a priest's daughter who plays the whore in Israel. You'll see that in Leviticus 21, verse 9. Now, it's been entirely my pleasure in answering these 14 legal questions. 14 legal questions for you, Christina. And I'm always encouraged and thrilled by the opportunity that the young people of America give me to answer their deeply disturbing Bible questions when I'm asked. Now, I'm going to close, and as I close, I want to counsel you on your potential career choices based upon your questions. I don't think reading or reading comprehension are your real strong points. But your ignorance, Christina, and your lack of reading skills, and your poor reading comprehension, and your special talent for mischaracterizing the scripture, and your ability to mischaracterize statements, and to misquote, and to take quotations out of context, and to articulate deception, to advocate intolerance, and deliberate indifference to justice, and due process and fair play, with your total mastery of promoting your anti-God bias with blasphemy, good humor, and a smile, makes you a star candidate for a career as a politician, as a lawyer, or as a preacher. Those are the three professions for which this woman is qualified, beyond a doubt. Politician, lawyer, or preacher. Now, this woman, Dr. Laura Schlesinger, and it's been reported, I think, in the press or someplace, I saw a piece, that she's a Jew. And she gives advice, and she was on the air one day, and she was talking about sodomy and sodomites. And it wasn't too long until she was roundly condemned up in Canada for a hate crime up there, because, you see, they broadcast, you know, like Oprah and other programs, you know, up in Canada. And they wouldn't schedule this Dr. Laura's program up there because she's guilty of hate crimes. Boys and girls, if you teach from the Bible, This is what leaves the Bible out of Christian, out of Christianity. And Christians don't have anything in common with the Bible. If there's anything in common with the Bible, I don't know what it is. I want some of you readers, you listeners out there, write to me and tell me what it is about you and your Christian philosophies and beliefs that come from the Bible. Name one. Just one. Not 15, 20, or 30. Just one. Write me, would you? And tell me what from the Bible you practice. Because I'm at a total loss. I don't know what the hell it is. Let me show you in the few minutes that we've got left here. This Dr. Laura, she comes on the air and she talks about a subject in the Bible, and she's called a hate crime protagonist or offender. Whatever happened to free speech? Whatever happened to the other guy? That's, you know, says, well, we don't agree with you. Now, I don't agree with Jews that don't cut their sideburns, or with Amish guys that wear funny clothes, but I don't make fun of them. If that's what those people want to do, what do we care? What difference does it make to us? And if this Dr. Laura wants to lambaste sodomites because of their behavior, so what? Don't we lambaste child abusers and incest characters or people that practice incest? Don't we lambaste those? What's wrong with that? Let's take integration and segregation. You know, here in our society today, we believe in integration, and we call segregation a crime. Well, listen, in Genesis 11, verses 1 through 9, the God of the Bible segregated all of the races of people on planet Earth and gave them a different language. What do you think of that? And Christians practice Christmas. The God of the Bible condemns Christmas and tells you in Jeremiah 10, verses 1 through 6, don't practice it. It's a heathen, pagan practice. Now, of course, Christians, they want to do what the heathen nations do around them. We want a king like all the nations around us, God. We want to have Christmas, Easter, New Year's, you know, like all the rest of the pagans around us. And then here's pork. I call them pig-eating Christians. We went through that with Christina's story here. In Leviticus 11, verse 7, it tells you, don't eat pig. Jesus said, man doesn't live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God. Kids, when he said that in Matthew 4, verse 4, not a word of the New Testament had ever been written yet. Don't give me this crap about, well, Jesus did away with the law. No. In Matthew 5:17, he said, think not that I've come to destroy the law of the prophets. Your belief that Jesus came to destroy the law of the prophets came from your preachers, came from your Christian preachers. Didn't come from the Bible, didn't come from Jesus, didn't come from God, didn't come from any of the prophets. Came from your lying, false prophet, wolf in sheep's clothing preacher. That's the guy that told you that. That's where you got that. And then there's Easter and interracial marriage. I remember I was watching Kent Hovind up here. You know, I've always had nothing but the best, you know, to say about Kent Hovind. You know, I'm always surprised, you know, when I find that this guy, as smart as he is, with letters after his name, he's not just Kent Hovind. It's Dr. Kent Hovind. The guy's got letters. Anyway, he's a Baptist, and I always was surprised that a guy with letters after his name would be a Baptist. But, you know, again, he said on his tapes, and I've got his tapes up here, and I recommend them, and I think that for $100, you can't go wrong buying those Kent Hovind tapes. But he said, I'm a preacher, and I look through the Bible, and I don't see anything wrong with interracial marriage. Hell, I'm a crummy plumber, and I can find 6 scriptures in the Bible that tell you not to marry outside your race. 6, and I'm just a damn plumber. Can you imagine what I'd be if I'd have gone to seminary? I mean, I thought I went and got an education and actually knew something. You can read it for yourself. Interracial marriage. Go to Deuteronomy 7, verses 1 through 11, and go to Ezra 10, verse 10. And you say, that's 2. I've got some more. That's 2 right there. Kent Hovind, been to seminary. Couldn't find 2 places in the Bible that tells you not to practice interracial marriage. Now, there are a number of people that practice miscegenation, interracial marriage. And they probably don't see anything wrong with it. And they probably are real happy with it. And, you know, get after it. I just wanted to point out to you that it's against the law, violates the scripture. You ought not to do that. Does that make me some kind of a hate monger? Well, always remember that I got this from God. I didn't get this myself. I didn't figure this out. I wasn't that smart. And then there's witchcraft. And listen, when you're out here taking drugs, you're going to the pharmacy and you're taking drugs, that's one, not the only, but one of the practices of witches and witchcraft. That's brewing up the witch's brew, you know, the witch's brew. Now, people that are 65 or older, you know, people of my generation, when you're 65 or older, on average, you're taking 6 drugs. 6. One is more than you ought to take, and when you're taking 6, you're a drug addict. Now, for some reason, the politicians and the preachers and the medical establishment and everybody in the country is in favor of this practice of witchcraft, and they evidently think that health comes out of a pill. Boys and girls, we Americans take more pills than anybody in the world, and we have the worst cases of disease. We have 99% of the people in this country have symptoms. 99% of us are sick. Oh my God, that's just about everybody. Hey, I don't think that 99% of your population being sick is good health. I think that's bad health. In 1918, 60% of the American population were symptom-free. I mean, we're talking less than 100 years ago. 60% of the population didn't wear hearing aids, didn't have diabetes, didn't have allergies, weren't wearing glasses, didn't have dental caries, didn't have cavities. 40% did. Today, it's 99%. Only 1% of us today in 2006 are symptom-free. Well, there's 18 health laws, and not very many people practice those 18 health laws, but 1% do. 1%. And then there's usury, a violation of Exodus 22, verses 25 through 27. That's one of 23 places in the Bible that tell you about the usury story. You know, usury is against the law. It's a criminal activity. Well, I looked this up, and there's 82 of these crimes that we're committing. Out of 133 laws in the Bible, 133 laws, we're in violation of 82. So let's just take 82 and divide it by 133. 61%. So we're in violation of 61% of the laws of the Bible. That's here in America. I guess the good news is we're still practicing about 39%, 38%. Boys and girls, that's a little over a third, and two-thirds of the laws of God, we've told him, stick it where there's no daylight, and we're not doing it. And I would contend that that's the reason why we're the sickest nation in the world and why we've got the problems that we've got. And the sooner we get back to practicing reason, logic, and common sense, which includes the Ten Commandments, I think we'll get a better result, bottom line, better result. Hey, I'm running out of time again. I'm going to have to leave it right there. I've answered the 14 questions. That takes care of that chore for this week. We'll see you back here again next week, which starts tomorrow, on the Law Hour and Editorial Review. So let me remind you that you have been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and the Law School, please go to our website, georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, the Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, and good night, friends.